that we've gotten to have so far. It is a wonderful day, the day of Pentecost, and what that means for all of us. It is really springtime. It's been rainy out. I know we've got a farmer or so in the congregation. The plants have been in. Has anybody done? Some people have done some gardening. It's a fun endeavor. Last year at the kind of the start of the quarantine, COVID, we got a big old mound of dirt delivered to our house because we had grand expectations of doing more gardening. It's still there, but we have used some of it. And when you get into gardening, and there are people I know in this congregation who are quite adept at it, your thumbs are as green as possible, and you get into these concepts of companion planting. One of the things that my wife was looking at when she was looking at the garden and what she was going to plant is where she would put things. Some things go really well together. Oddly enough, very good companion plants to put together. Carrots actually go well with peas, with beans, with onions, with lettuce, but don't put them with dill. I didn't know that. You know, I wouldn't naturally go, well, I'll put some dill right next to a carrot because dill is more of kind of the I guess it's a spice or a, it's not a spice, it's some, right? And so, as you can tell, I'm not the gardener or the planter. But when you get into gardening and you get into that, you start thinking about these things. And so as spring was coming along, a few weeks back, I think it was in the middle of the Days of Unleavened Bread or maybe shortly afterwards, we decided to get rolling on our garden. We got the bed all prepared, and if you've been to our house in the kind of the back portion of our yard before it goes down the hill, we had some rhubarb, some asparagus, and some dill that the prior owner of the property had planted. And it's just in the middle of the hill, so you have to mow around this thing. It's right at the cusp of going down the hill, and so you have to turn around it with the mower. It was a little bit, it just wasn't in the best spot. And when you're doing a garden and you want to be able to have easy access to it, you want to be able to get to the things, you want to make sure you can get around what you do. And the thing about rhubarb, it gets huge leaves. And underneath of those leaves, it hides all sorts of things, like asparagus. So you never actually know when the asparagus is coming up because they were all just there knit together. And so we set about saying, you know what, this is the year. Since we're doing the garden, we're going to dig up this asparagus, and we're going to dig up this rhubarb, and we're going to move it. And so if you would put the first slide up there, Mr. Conway, the beautiful thing about Google is you can actually see what you're going to be digging up. And not having ever dug up any rhubarb before, I was like, I want to know what I'm going to be digging, because how far out do I have to dig? How deep am I going to have to dig? Like, what kind of tools and implements do I need to move this rhubarb? And rhubarb, as you can see here, it's a nice tuber. You got the beautiful leaves. If you go to the next picture, you'll see what the root system looks like. And it goes down pretty far. You get these long tap roots that drop down with the rhubarb. And so they're pretty hardy as far as a plant goes. You know, you think, well, if I dig down and I'm going to dig up some potatoes, I got the potato fork, you're going to go down maybe a foot. Rhubarb goes deeper than that, incidentally speaking. So when you're going to go dig up rhubarb, you need to be ready to dig a hole in your yard. Couple this with, if you go to the next picture, how many of you know about the root system of asparagus? Anyone? I now know a lot about the root system of asparagus, as opposed to the picture that you saw about the rhubarb, where you have this nice defined tap root coming down and a couple things going off to the side. You're like, that's a good root system. Asparagus would be, I would say, think Medusa's head, a plate of spaghetti. It's intense. It's very intense. And you can kind of see here, you see the person's foot. If you go to the next picture here, Mr. Conway, you'll see this is not a small root system. You're like, I know what roots are. They're orange. I pull them up by the green. I get a carrot about yay long. That's a root system, right? It's a tap root. That's a plant that I can go ahead and easily transplant. Now, this picture, mind you, does not really have scale that's actually about 5 foot across. This was not the one that we dug up. This is actually one I pulled from the interwebs, because in the midst of digging a deeper hole, a wider hole, bigger than I ever thought I was going to when we were transplanting this asparagus and this rhubarb, I was not about to take pictures. I was exhausted, right? So we didn't take pictures. So I had to go onto Google and I had to go find these pictures. But this is what the asparagus root system looks like. And you kind of have to search for a little bit to find these, because the ones that they like to show you are the ones that just make it look like it's just flowing straight down. And, oh, it's so easy for you to just go and just transplant. You can take this little bit of asparagus and just plant it over here, and it'll be easy for you. It's just kind of like these thick noodles that you'll just go ahead and put into the ground. It's not like that at all, especially when you're digging something up that has been there for, I mean, we've been in this house for 4 years almost now, and the individuals who were there before had been there even longer, right? Now, these two things, oven by themselves, you're like, well, that's a pretty good root system for the rhubarb. It's deep. It's a pretty good root system for the rhubarb. It's just big. I mean, I can tell you, we were digging, and you hear the creak in the shovel, and that's how you know you're putting some load on that shovel, when you start to push down, pressuring on the side of the handle to try to pry that thing up. It was work. We were out there. It took me a day to transplant rhubarb and asparagus. It was crazy. But imagine these two things combined, because in the middle you had the rhubarb and the asparagus is kind of hugging, we'll say. It's all encompassed by the asparagus roots. And so if you're thinking, well, I'll thin out the herd a little bit, I'll just get the rhubarb. You got to try to find the rhubarb in the middle of the asparagus. And when asparagus and rhubarb are planted in concert, this whole idea of a companion planting, I don't believe there's such a thing for asparagus, because asparagus just expands to fill all space. And so when I thought I was just going to be digging down straight, when I saw the rhubarb and the taproot and the pitcher, it showed me on Google exactly what it was going to look like. I knew what I was getting into until I got there. Because then, the taproot couldn't go straight down. It couldn't go straight down because there was asparagus roots in the way. And so because the asparagus roots were there, I have taproots going out to the side. And so instead of just going straight down, being able to cut off the asparagus roots where I want to, I have to worry about whether or not I'm going to get into the main taproot of the rhubarb. Am I going to kill it if I cut off those taproots? Because they're not going straight down, they're going out in all these different directions. It didn't have the opportunity to grow in the way that it did. The entanglement there was just so all-encompassing. We don't... Oh, good. You already have those down, Mr. Conway. Thank you. So when you have this, and you imagine the rhubarb and you imagine the asparagus all together, it was just... It was something to behold. It was a mess. We started off with these great high hopes of just transplanting one, putting some asparagus here, putting the rhubarb over here. By the end of the day, the last clump, we're like, no, just get it. Just take it out, and we're going to move it. I'll just dig a big hole. It's easier to dig a big hole than it is to try to sit there and weed all of this stuff and separate it out. And it made me think of Mark chapter 4. So let's start off. Let's go to Mark chapter 4. Mark chapter 4. We'll start at the beginning. We'll read verses 1 through 9 here in Mark chapter 4. This is the parable of the sower. Again, Jesus began to teach by the sea, and a great multitude was gathered to him, so that he got into a boat, and he sat in it on the sea, and the whole multitude was on the land facing the sea. And he taught them many things by parables, and he said to them in his teaching, "Listen, behold, a sower went out to sow. And it happened as he sowed that some seed fell by the wayside, and the birds of the air came and devoured it. Some fell on stony ground where it did not have much earth, and immediately it sprang up because it had no depth of earth. But when the sun was up, it was scorched, and because it had no root, it withered away. And some seed fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked it, and it yielded no crop. But other seed fell on good ground and yielded a crop that sprang up, increased, and produced, some 30-fold, some 60, and some 100. And he said to them, "He who has an ear to hear, let him hear." As I'm digging out this rhubarb with my wife, our kids are helping us, all the effort that was put into it, I was thinking about this big. They're huge leaves. They're amazing. I have never once seen a leaf that size on our rhubarb plant. Because you can have a situation where another plant, a thorn, and this happens in the rainforest as well, where you'll have the large canopy. The trees shoot up very good nutrients, everything that they can possibly get, all the rain, so that they're going to thrive. And then the things that are below them, in the lower foliage and the brush, they don't thrive. They don't produce. And while we have enough rhubarb for our family, because we're not a big rhubarb consuming family, it's not producing as much as you could easily. And this parable of the sower came to mind because the seed that fell among thorns, those thorns grew up and choked it, and it yielded no crop. Let's go down to verse 13. And Jesus said to them, "Do you not understand this parable? How then will you understand all the parables? The sower sows thorns by the wayside where the word is sown. When they hear, Satan comes immediately and takes away the word that was sown in their hearts. These likewise are the ones sown on the stony ground, who, when they hear the word, immediately receive it with gladness. And they have no root in themselves, and so endure only for a time. Afterward, when tribulation or persecution arises for the word..." Now these are the ones sown among thorns. They are the ones who hear the word. "And the cares of this world, the deceitfulness of riches, and the desires for other things entering in choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. But these are the ones sown on good ground, those who hear the word, accept it, and bear fruit, some 30-fold, some 60, and some 100. The quality of soil was not the issue with our rhubarb. It had a very big root system. Very difficult to have to transplant and try to move. It had good earth. It had good root system. But what had happened is that another plant, something else in its surrounding, in its environment, had come in and choked it back. I mean, there was still enough that we could cut some off. And you can make one pie, maybe two pies a year. But when you think about how rhubarb grows and how quickly it grows, you're like, there should be a whole lot more from a patch that's about 5 foot by 3 foot. You should get way more rhubarb off of that. So it produced enough not to die, but it didn't really produce. James F. Fawcett and Brown has this to say about Mark chapter 4, verse 19. It says, "First, the cares of this world, anxious, unrelaxing attention to the business of this present life." Anxious, unrelaxing attention to the business of this present life. They also refer to the deceitfulness of riches, of those riches which are the fruit of this worldly care. The pleasures of this life, referring to, or the lusts of the things entering in, refers to the enjoyment in themselves, may be innocent, which worldly prosperity enables one to indulge. They might seem like nothing, but it really does amount to something because it's pulling you away, allowing you to indulge. These are the things that choke or smother the word, drawing off so much of one's attention, absorbing so much of one's interest, and using up so much of one's time that only the dregs of these remain for spiritual things. And a ragged, hurried, and heartless formalism is at length all the religion of such persons. What a vivid picture is this of the mournful condition of many, especially in great commercial countries, who once promised much fruit. They bring no fruit to perfection, indicating how much growth there may be in the early stages of such a case, and promise of fruit, which after all never ripens. The plant was still alive. And for those of us who have been in church for a long time, we're still here. And sometimes we can take that oven by itself to be a good thing. Well, haven't we endured? Yes. Great. But have we grown? Have we produced fruit in abundance? Because God does not sow something for which He does not expect a return. If you consider, again, going back to what we read in Jude, where he's talking about clouds. Well, would that be a cloud? It's a cloud, isn't it? But is it actually producing water? Is it bringing any rain? Or is it just a useless cloud? A tree that doesn't bear fruit for the fall and then it dies. What was its purpose? It had all that energy it took in it sprouted leaves, it did its thing during the spring and the summer, and yet there's no fruit. And then the leaves fall off, and you're like, well, what did that tree do? I have a black cherry tree that's just behind our house, a wild cherry tree, and it looked pitiful. So I did a pretty significant hack job on that thing about a year or so ago. I think it was in a February, still the tail end of winter, but I cut a bunch of the branches off of it. And in that spring, I tell you, that thing got more green than I've ever seen it in my life. That thing went and it sprouted up. It's got these tall shoots now. Now you're like, wow, that kind of looked like a truffle tree from a Dr. Seuss book for a while. But it has grown back and it's actually producing cherries once again. And it's looking like it's coming back to life. But these things where we're talking about here in verse 19, the cares of this world, the deceitfulness of riches and the desires for other things enter in, choke the word, and becomes unfruitful. So the word is still there, the plant is still there, we are still here, and yet what is the fruit? What is the fruit? What are we showing for all of the energy, all of the investment that God has placed in us as we've walked from Passover through unleavened bread and now here to Pentecost? All of the investment that God has put into each and every one of us in our spiritual walk from our start to now, what is that fruit? Are we choking? Do you ever sit and feel as if your spiritual growth has become stunted? So for the remainder of this message today, I'd like to address the question, how can we avoid being choked and becoming unfruitful? If you like a more positive title, how can we thrive and produce fruit? Because it's the same answer. How can we avoid being choked and become unfruitful? Or how can we thrive and produce fruit? This is such an important component of our spiritual walk with God because He expects there to be return on the investment. You can go to the parable of the talents. I'll just reference it, but we won't go there today. He has an expectation that what He sows is going to produce something. You can also reference the parable of the fig tree. When Jesus Christ cursed it, He says, you had leaves, you look like you should have something, but you got nothing. And it shrivels up, I have no need for you, right? Those should be good warnings for us. So how can we, unlike our poor rhubarb plant, not get choked out by what's around us, not allow the cares of the world to come in? The first thing that we can do, that we need to do, is to ask God for a love of and belief in the truth. Ask God for a love of and a belief in the truth. There is no way to be successful as a Christian if we do not love our Father and the words that He tells us, and we don't fully believe them. We must have a love of and a belief in the truth. Let's go to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. This is speaking of times to come. It says, now, brethren, concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. And as you watch the news and you see the happenings in the world and you watch Israel just having much consternation, and we know that in the end the Gentile troops will be in the streets of Jerusalem, and you just see things happening. We know that the coming of Jesus Christ is just inching closer and closer. And concerning that time and our gathering to Him, we ask you not to soon be shaken, not to soon be shaken in mind or troubled, either by spirit or by word or by letter, as if from us, as though the day of Christ had come. Let no one deceive you by any who now restrains will do so until he is taken out of the way. And then the lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of His mouth and destroy with the brightness of His coming. The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan, with all power, signs, and lying wonders, and with all among those who perish because they did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved. For this reason, God will send them strong delusion that they should believe the lie, that they all may be condemned who did not believe the truth but had pleasure in unrighteousness. Those individuals who do not have in their hearts, they have not received it. They did not receive the love of the truth. And where are they focused? Verse 12 says, they did not believe the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. The cares of this world, the various things that can draw us away. Well, that's where they went. We can become worried about what we see and what we hear, and this is exactly what Paul is telling them. He's telling Timothy, he's telling Silvanus, he's telling those in Thessalonica, don't worry about this stuff. I've told you before in the past, be steadfast and understand that what I've told you is going to happen is going to happen. Because this is what God says is going to happen. This is the truth. This is His word. You need to believe it. And don't waver. Verse 13. But we are bound to give thanks to God always for you, brethren, beloved by the Lord, because God from the beginning chose you for salvation through sanctification by the Spirit and belief in the truth, to which He called you by our gospel for the obtaining of the glory of our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, brethren, stand fast and hold the traditions which you were taught, whether by word or our epistle. Now may our Lord Jesus Christ Himself and our God and Father, who has loved us and given us everlasting consolation and good hope by grace, comfort your hearts and establish you in every good work, every good word and work. What establishes us as Christians in the relationship with God is the same thing that establishes us in any other relationship that we have. It is that of trust, which is founded on belief. Right? The belief in, the trust of, the love for. You think you're going to be able to make it through all of the garbage that's going to get thrown our way? Not without a love of and a belief in the truth that has been conveyed to us from our fathers. We heard about this earlier today a couple times. God will establish us. He will establish our hearts. He will comfort us, and He will set us in the way that we need to in order to be able to endure. If we want to make sure that we are not choked by what's going on around us, and again, it is so easy to become caught up in the cares of this world and what's going on around us. And it can hide as, well, I'm being responsible, so I'm watching. I'm told to be mindful of what's going on. I want to be aware of this, of what's going on. I mean, Jesus Christ, didn't He condemn the Pharisees for being able to look around them and know what was going on with the weather, but not yet know what was going on as far as who was in front of them and how He was fulfilling prophecy at the time? So we need to know that, don't we? We need to keep up with all of those things. It's like, yes, but if we do that to the detriment of making sure that our relationship with God is founded in that belief and that trust being instilled in our hearts, that is what will sustain us. Knowing an exact date, and this is what Matthew 24 is so beautiful about, Jesus Christ was telling me, He's like, I can tell you about this stuff, but see that you're not deceived. This is the important thing. See that you are not deceived. See that it is implanted in your heart so strongly. See that the truth and your belief in it is in there so that you're not going to waver. Which is exactly what we read here. Paul was telling him, it says, not to be soon shaken, verse 2, not to be soon shaken in mind or troubled either by spirit or by word or by letter. Don't worry about that stuff. Have instilled in our hearts a love of and a belief in the truth. A second thing that we need to have, we need to do in order to thrive and produce fruit. So we need to ask God to prepare our hearts. Ask God to prepare our hearts. That's one of the things that all farmers do when they're preparing a field, is they prep the soil, they prep the dirt. And if you go back to the parable of the sower, there's some seed that gets snatched away right away by the birds. There's some seed that falls by the wayside over by the stones, and it's just not good dirt. It doesn't say there's bad dirt for this seed that gets choked out by the thorns. It's good enough soil that you can have that seed and the thorns. You can have enough of a plant that is there that it looks like it's going to produce something. It looks like it's going to be okay, and yet it doesn't thrive. And we need to ask God in that same way to prepare our heart. Let's go to Psalm chapter 10. Psalm 10, verse 17. Psalm 10, verse 17. Psalm 10, verse 17. Lord, you have heard the desire of the humble. You will prepare their heart. You will cause your ear to hear, to do justice to the fatherless and the oppressed, that the man of the earth may oppress no more. God is the one who does this. God prepares the heart. And we can ask him to do that. It's exactly what David did. He said, "Search me, cleanse me, wash me thoroughly from sin." Prepare our heart. Ask God to prepare your heart that it is ready to receive the seed. And if the seed is already there, if you're already baptized, ask him to fertilize it. Ask him to make sure that it's good soil, that the plant can grow. There's a whole other side of agricultural science you can get into when you talk about the pH balance of nutrients that are in the ground. And so therefore, if you actually have balanced soil, you're going to have good plants. And when your soil is depleted of certain things, well, that's when you get the thistles. That's when you get the thorns. That's when you get these other plants that come in and can overtake an area, and you won't be able to grow plants that give you fruit. I digress, though. That's a whole other conversation there. God is the one who prepares our heart, and we have to ask him. You or I prepare it. It's wicked and deceitful. Who can know it? Pretty sure this is what I need. We don't know what we need. We heard earlier, it is not in man to know his ways, to direct his paths, right? We have to have God give that to us. 2 Chronicles chapter 12, we'll see an example of this. 2 Chronicles chapter 12. You can think that you have done all the preparation that you need. You've done everything right. And so therefore you're going to have a great crop. You were raised in the church. You're a second, third, fourth generation. You have never erred from this. You know what you know, and you're not going to go ahead and falter. 2 Chronicles chapter 12, verse 13. We see here kind of the little epitaph for Rehoboam. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 13 says, "Thus King Rehoboam strengthened himself in Jerusalem and reigned. Now Rehoboam was 41 years old when he became king, and he reigned 17 years in Jerusalem, the city which the Lord had chosen out of all the tribes of Israel to put his name there. His mother's name was Naamah the Ammonitess. But he did evil because he did not prepare his heart to seek the Lord. He did evil because he did not prepare his heart to seek the Lord. His father was Solomon. His grandfather was David, a man after God's own heart. I mean, God came before his father because his father was humble and said, you know, I am but a child. I don't even know how to direct my own paths. Help me. James chapter 1, verse 21 says, "Therefore lay aside all filthiness and overflow of wickedness." That's exactly what Rehoboam did evil. He did wickedness. "We're to lay aside all filthiness and overflow of wickedness and receive with meekness the implanted word, which is able to save your souls." So we receive that, but then what is the expectation then? "To be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving ourselves, and not a doer, he is like a man observing his natural face in a mirror. For he observes himself, goes away, and immediately forgets what kind of man he was. But he who looks into the perfect law of liberty, and continues in it, and is not a forgetful hearer, but is a doer, one will be blessed in what he does. If anyone among you thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this one's religion is useless. Pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this: to visit orphans and widows in their trouble, and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. We are not allowing his truth, the fruit that he expects, to be choked out to where we become unfruitful. Verse 25 there in James chapter 1 says, he who looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues in it. What was the first point that we said? Make sure that we have the love of God. Ask God for a love of his truth, a love and a belief in his truth. We have to ask him for that. If we're continuing in his law, if we look into it, we know what it is, and we're continuing in it, well, isn't that the same sort of relationship that we're talking about with him, where we understand what is expected? We are bought in so much so that it affects our actions, right? Whenever I mow, I notice wherever the thistles are. And there are different kinds of thistles. There's some that are just like, they'll grow out, they're kind of flat, and it'll kind of take up space, and you don't ever want to step on those. They have really long spines. They're just not comfortable. Then there are the standard thistles. I would say they're a little bit smaller. They don't have as broad of a leaf, but they'll grow tall. But they don't get they'll get a little bit of a purple bud on them at the end of the summer, and they'll puff and go everywhere. And then you have the Canadian bull thistles that'll get to be about as tall as I am, and they've got that massive spike on the top of them. You've got cow thistles that are a little bit softer, where if you break them, they'll kind of get it milky. But you can see all of these things as you're going around and watching your lawn or your yard or whatever you're caring for, just like you can if you're looking in the garden. You know what is going to become invasive, what is going to grow faster than your own plants. It's like right about now, how many of you have had those helicopter whirly maple seeds drop down? It's insane how quickly they clog up your gutters. It's insane how quickly they will sprout. I'm like, how can you grow that fast? But they find like one spot of open ground, and all of a sudden they're faster than a pea plant getting tall. I'm like, what? And you have to watch, and you have to know how to treat the environment around the plant that you're really trying to cultivate. God looks at us and he says, oh, it's Nathan over there, or it's insert your name over there. Are we allowing him to cultivate that soil around us, around our heart, to guard us from the cares of the world that are going to pull us away? Because I tell you, we're flighty. We're like the dog in the movie Up. Squirrel, you just turn and you're looking, and we can be like, oh, that's what I need to focus on. Oh, that's the thing I'm supposed to be concerned about today, and you know, this news item or this difficulty at work or this thing at school, and we're there, and we have to tamp out those fires, and God says, sufficient for the day is its own worries. I'm going to take care of you. Understand, know, like Paul told Timothy and Silvanus, you know, don't get so caught up in that stuff such that it unnerves you, as if you're going to, you know, have somebody write to you in word or in letter or something that is different than what God has already told us. Right? This is why we have to have an understanding of, to be there, as it says, looking into the perfect law of liberty, to continue in that. Because when we do that, then we know what is important. And if we allow that to be what guides us through, well, it's just like going through in a garden and just picking out all the little weeds. No, I don't need to be worried about that. Nope, don't need to have that here. I want to make sure that this is going to be the best possible soil and substrate for this growth. To take the seed that God has given us at our baptism and to just cultivate it. To make sure that it's going to have growth and it's going to be successful. So we want to ask God for a love of and a belief in the truth. We also want to ask God to prepare our hearts. A third thing that we should ask, and this is the tough one, it's even harder than digging up asparagus, and rhubarb, ask God to cut what needs cutting. Ask God to cut what needs cutting. Whenever I look at a tree, I'm like, oh, this would be, you know, if it would be the nice shape, you know, a rounded shape. But actually, trees of them by themselves have their own shape. You can have some, like an oak tree, will naturally grow into more of a kind of like a teardrop shape where it's rounder at the base, goes up to a point. But each tree has its own shape. But you kind of look at it, you're like, oh, I would like to prune this, or I would like to prune that. And just because you prune it doesn't mean it's healthy for growth. Did you know that, well, some of the ugliest trees I've ever seen are fruit trees, nut trees, the things that actually bear out what we eat. But these other trees, they look pretty. But earlier this year, when all of that freezing rain came through, what it told me is it doesn't matter what I think looks pretty. It doesn't mean it's healthy. Because guess what? The ones that didn't have the strength to bear the load or the weight of the ice, they're the ones that broke. All of that stuff came. Rotten things, dead limbs came down. I mean, I had a pile of brush. I'm still working through some of it as the wind comes through, but God takes care of that through nature, and I can see that it doesn't matter what I thought looked nice on a tree, and I was like, oh, I'll just trim that, it'll make a perfect-looking tree. And then you get ice, and then the one limb that you thought was just perfect is going to last. That's going to be the main part of the tree, and it breaks. And now what are you left with? You're left with a broken tree. But I thought it looked great. We need to ask God to cut what needs cutting because He knows. Not only does He know the end result, kind of like when you watch those master, the master bonsai pruners, they're like they have an idea for what they want the tree to look like at the end, and I can't see it. And they start to bend their wires around it. They move the branches to where they want it to look like it, and then to the point that once it's there and it's used to it, they can actually take all the wires off and you have this beautiful looking piece of art. God looks at each of us and He knows what He wants in the end. Which is why He created us. In Genesis, He created us in His image, in His likeness. He and the Word wanted us to be in their likeness so that in the end, we're going to be in their likeness. We're going to be in their family. He knows what He wants us to look like. He says, ah, a little off the top here, a little bending over here, a little pruning over here. We need to ask Him to cut what needs cutting. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 11 reminds us of this. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 11. It says, my son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord. I know that there were times when I was a kid, I did not have this outlook. When my parents chastened me, not the biggest fan. I didn't like it. Pretty sure I didn't deserve it. Pretty sure my sibling deserved it more than I did. I didn't want it. But my son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor detest His correction. For the Lord, for whom the Lord loves, He corrects, just as a father the son in whom he delights. There is a point to this. The temporal, short-lived discomfort that we might have is there for a reason. Under the load, if you have to get to the point that it causes that much pain, you are thick-headed all the way up to that, and it's your own fault that it had to be that bad. So work on not being so thick-skulled. Come and talk to me. We'll talk about how thick-skulled I am and how long it takes to get through. Fully, we're preparing ourselves. We're asking God to prepare our hearts so that when He makes the cut, when something has to go, we're like, oh, you know what? It feels a lot better without that load. It feels a lot better without that there. I can see why that had to go somewhere. Why it didn't need to be a part of who I am. And I'm so happy you took that away. It's kind of like, well, now lighter. I'd rather carry your cross than carry the one that I'm carrying. When we have that mindset and that relationship with Him, it opens up the door to being more open to the cutting that needs to happen. Jeremiah chapter 10. Jeremiah chapter 10, verse 23. Jeremiah chapter 10, verse 23. I've already referenced this, but it's good to read it. Jeremiah chapter 10, verse 23. O Lord, I know the way of man is not in himself. You need only look out the window or in the mirror and consider the times that you have been uncomfortable. Consider the times that you have not been able to figure out where to go and were looking and floundering about trying to figure out how to proceed. You need only to look at how people treat one another. It is not in our way to know what to do. It is not in man who walks to direct his own steps. And so, this is kind of like one of those therefore things. If we know that, if you know and I know that we are ill-equipped to handle this burden of understanding of what to prune, of where to go, it makes sense, even though it may cut into our pride a little bit and our feelings of autonomy and individuality. But the next thing that has to happen is verse 24, O Lord, correct me. You take care of me. Show me the way to go. But with justice, not in your anger, lest you bring me to nothing. So we must ask God to correct us with mercy, with justice. Not in your anger, lest you bring me to nothing. I'll tell you, that has got to be one of the most condemning things to consider as a parent. If you've gone through things with your kids and you're working through stuff, you ever get frustrated? You ever get a little bit angry? But then we want to go and pray this to God, be like, but be gentle. But we're frustrated with our kids. To not do so in anger, God gives us these opportunities to consider what He goes through as our parent, to be able to deal with us in compassion, to be able to deal with us with mercy. All the times that He keeps telling us the same things about how to prepare our hearts, about, no, that's not important, Nathan, stop thinking about that. No, prune that. I thought I cut that branch off. Why are you trying to graft it back in there? I took that away, right? He cuts, He prunes. John chapter 15, beginning of that chapter, we do often read this on the Passover evening during that service. John chapter 15, verse 1, I am the true vine, this is Jesus Christ speaking, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, He takes it away. And every branch that bears fruit, He prunes, that it may bear more fruit. This is the premise of how God works. The end desire is produce. And to the point of what we heard in this morning's sermon, why does He want us to bear fruit? Because it's tasty. It draws the birds of the air and it draws other people. And you ever go on a walk and you realize, oh, it's like there are some black cherries over here. I can pick a couple. You ever walk along the path and there's some raspberries or blackberries? You're like, I was just out for a hike. What a bonus. You can just go and you can pick a couple. This is refreshing. This is lovely. Who doesn't want a free snack? You don't have to chew through like the grain that the disciples had to when they were walking through and hungry. This is just opulent. Fruit attracts people, so much so that God says there's going to be a special tree in the kingdom. It's going to bear fruit all year round. That's weird, but amazing. It's going to be different fruit every month. I would like one of those. I'd like to. You know what? If you consider how much you spend on produce, going to go get fruit during the summer, you think that's expensive? Go try to get fruit during the winter, right? Fruit is amazing. It's sustaining. It's sweet. It's good. You can make wine from it. You can do all sorts of fantastic things with fruit. God wants us to bear fruit because then when other people see it, they're attracted to it. They like it. It brings in birds, bees. It brings in all sorts of things that produce more. And that's what God is all about. He's about producing more. And so He wants to prune us. He wants us to be okay with that, to cut off what needs cutting so that, again, there is growth. And it's not just growth for the sake of growth. It is growth for the sake of producing fruit. And we can confuse those two sometime. And that's where you get, again, back to the tree. I had that black cherry tree. It looked like it was going to die. And so I pruned it. Because it's like, oh, it's going to die. I'm going to prune it. It's like, no, please don't. Oh, I will grow big and bushy and be, it'll be wonderful. You'll like it. Right? It's kind of like that sort of thing. It's like, all of a sudden, it's flush with life. And you say, okay, I'll give it another chance. Let's see if it bears fruit this time. And we know that God does the same thing in that regard. Okay, I didn't cut it down. Let's come back and see if it bears fruit. No, it doesn't. Nope. Now it's withered. It's gone. It's done. I don't have time for that because what I'm doing is I'm trying to cultivate fruit, trying to grow fruit. Pentecost, as the Feast of the First Fruits, is a time wherein God expects to begin seeing some return on the seeds that he has planted. We know that Christ was the wave sheaf offering. He is the first of the first fruits. He went before and he is the perfect first fruit. But again, I've kind of referenced about first fruits, the actual first fruits when you're growing things. If they're not put in at the right time, if the soil isn't the right balance, if there are other things that you haven't fully weeded out and kind of sussed out, the first ones that you get, they can get sun bleached, they can be scorched, the worms find them first, right? They can be a little bit weird. But God is here to take the time to invest in each of us so that we're pruned, so that our hearts are ready, and so that planted in us is a truth and the belief and a love for what he is teaching. If we have the love of the truth planted in our hearts and we allow God to prune us, then we're not going to be like those pictures we saw at the beginning. We're not going to be like a rhubarb plant that is just embroiled in and choked by the artichoke. Not artichoke. Asparagus. Thank you. You guys were listening. Choke was in my head. So you're not going to be choked out by the asparagus. We're not going to be stunted to the point that we don't have fruit. We need to make sure. This is what God has called us for, is to bear much fruit. Let's make sure that we have instilled in us a love of and a belief in the truth, that we ask God to prepare our hearts, and that we are okay with Him cutting what needs to be cut. When we do, there will be some who bear 30-fold, some 60-fold, and some 100-fold.